Hello, and welcome to Buddies Without Borders. My name is Stevie Jackson. I'm an actor, writer, and producer in Vancouver, BC.
My name is Christopher Royce. I am a writer and a podcaster in San Francisco Bay Area in California. And here we be. We do podcast. That's what I was going to say. That's where we are. It's a Sunday afternoon. We can has podcast.
I'm just going to tell the listeners right now that I'm working on very little sleep. And so this might go off the rails. I feel it's best to be honest with you all. I have no excuse for this. It's just the random insomnia that has occasionally plagued me throughout my life. It comes and goes. Showed up last night. And so here we are, a pot of coffee and not much sleep later.
See, now I'm thinking of it as like an entity and wishing you had Frank and Sadie Doyle to like help you deal with insomnia.
Oh, they could come banish it for me.
Yeah.
That would be nice. I wish they weren't fictional.
I think I'd say that about a lot of people. I wish they weren't fictional.
Well, I don't know. A lot of fictional characters I feel should probably stay fictional.
Sure.
But there are some who like, it would be completely harmless if Frank and Sadie were real.
Mm-hmm. Although their existence would mean that the things that they routinely deal with would be real. And I don't know that I'm, because if they were real without all of the ghosts and ghouls and goblins and such,
vampires,
then they would just be bored.
They'd be drunk.
Yeah.
Which they are anyway. I mean, I think if Frank and Sadie didn't have any extra normal, paranormal, whatever threats to deal with, I think they would just be even more drunk and having even more sex, because it is canon that Frank and Sadie are a little frisky.
Yeah.
And somewhat kinky.
Sure.
But they are fictional, so we will leave them to their fictional realm. Sadly, not come and banish my insomnia. It will go away. It always does. Sooner or later. Sometimes it's, you know, one bad night, sometimes it's three or four. I've never known. It's been going on literally since I was a kid, like under 10 years old. So it's how I got started listening to comedy, actually, because I would I had a clock radio in my room from the time I was quite young, because I had the kind of parents who were like, here's an alarm clock, get up for school.
Yeah.
I did not have the kind of parents who were shaking me awake when I was 17 trying to get me out of the house. Like they expected me to be able to do basic life skills, like get myself up in the morning. Mm-hmm. So from the time I was quite young, I had a clock radio in my room. And so when I couldn't sleep, I would turn on the late night comedy hour. Because
cool.
And it was on at like, I don't even know, but I think it was on at like 1 a.m. or something.
Is this local or Canada or?
I mean, it was radio. So it was definitely somewhere in the realm of where I was living at the time. So Southern Ontario. It was probably out of Toronto. I imagine it was a station out of Toronto.
Sure.
My usual daytime station at the time was CFRB 1010, which is still around, but is now exclusively talk radio from what I know.
Yeah.
But there were other, I don't remember if the Comedy Hour was on CFRB, if it was on Chum FM. Shout out to my Ontario homies who are recognizing all these stations. I don't know. I don't remember, because this was like, I mean, I was 9 or something.
But this was just, so it was a local or regional radio station doing their own thing. It wasn't a bigger show that was being syndicated around.
Oh, no, like they legit just played comedy albums.
Oh, okay.
Like it was where I don't want to say his name, but it was where I first heard the stand-up comedy of the man we used to call America's Dad, the one who used to sell us yellow pudding pops and has disappointed us all greatly.
Mm-hmm.
But it was where I first encountered him. I knew him from his television show, of course.
Yeah.
Already. Television shows, the cartoon one and the live action one, but primarily the live action one where he was a doctor and his wife was a lawyer and they had all these kids.
Yeah.
I'm sure everyone knows who I'm talking about. I just refuse to do him the courtesy of saying his name anymore, because now I know.
Fuck that guy.
I know he's a monster now. And yeah. It's disappointing. But back then, that was how I came into contact with the stand-up comedy that he had done like in the 70s and stuff, before I was born and or old enough to listen to it. Although I suppose it could be argued that I was not quite old enough to be listening to it. But you know, sometimes it's 1 a.m. and your parents are asleep. They can't be expected to control their 9-year-old's radio listening.
Sure.
Also, it was, you know, it was a different world back then, no pun intended.
Yeah.
From what I recall, the comedy that was played on the radio was clean.
I would think it would have to be.
Yeah.
Because I mean,
I actually don't know that he worked Blue at that time. I don't know.
I don't think he ever did. But it occurs to me that like in the States, we have the safe harbor laws where after 10 p.m. you could play certain things. But even then, I think you could maybe get into like some light PG-13 content. I don't know how many F-bombs you can drop even at 2 a.m.
This was the mid 80s.
Yeah.
So swearing in general was more scandalous at the time. It didn't have the place in entertainment that it does now.
Sure.
It just wasn't in anything that was even PG-13 most of the time. Sometimes I will hear words on television and think like, I remember when we weren't allowed to say that. I remember when we weren't allowed to say damn.
Yeah.
And the creativity that came out of that in terms of what writers had to do to express anger.
Yeah.
Because your character can't say they can't say god damn it, they can't say shit, they can't say fuck, they can't say ass, they can't say anything. Mm-hmm. I love that I went to ass last. They can say that one in the context of the animal.
Exactly.
But at the time, like, they couldn't say anything like that. So you'd hear things like, dang damn it, gold darn it.
Sure.
I'm sending you to darn heck.
Yeah. I do like the sort of comedy meta joke of, hey, nice ass, and then you pan to a donkey. Like,
yeah,
that will always be funny. But generally, I feel like my attitude towards sensitivity around so-called dirty languages grow up.
Well, I think the world has changed a lot now too. Like, it's become so much more acceptable. But back then, it really was kind of a civility or decency thing. I don't know. It was had associations. Like, it was never said in polite company, and we've totally gone away from that, which is, I mean, I have no real opinion on that either way.
I think
on the one hand, you should be able to express yourself without it, and if you can't, maybe expand your vocabulary. On the other hand, sometimes you really need to say the real word. You just do. Like, sometimes you need it for emphasis, or, you know, there's just no other word that will do. We all have favorite swear words. I mean, that was one of my favorite questions that James Lipton used to ask people
in
the
actor's
studio, right?
Yeah.
And most of them had the same one. Anyway.
Dagnabbit.
Of course. Which of the Battlecast Galactus stars was it that made up the word frack?
It was that one.
It was. Battlestar Galactica. I know.
I knew you knew what you meant.
And when they couldn't say fuck on television. I think you still can't on network TV. I think the F word is the one you still can't say.
Well, that was Sci-Fi Channel, but you generally can't unleash an F word on basic cable without a special dispensation of some kind. But
I think they came up with frack to express it.
Yeah. But I feel like the idea that certain words have like certain moral characteristics to them is kind of ridiculous, because the words that we consider curse words change pretty rapidly in a historical lens.
They do. On the other hand, I'm not comfortable with a 6-year-old running around spewing.
To me, that's just hilarious.
I don't know. I think you need to be a certain age before.
Especially not having one.
If they don't know what it means and they've picked it up somewhere, that's kind of funny.
But sure.
If they're like dropping F-bombs in their everyday conversation, I think you've gone wrong in your parenting. So
I would concede to that point, but only within like a societal context, because I don't think the words themselves have like special powers, you know, abracadabra or whatever. It's just what people will think of your 6-year-old for using
that
language.
Those words are going to conjure anything, but you know, they're reserved for foul language for a reason.
Sure.
Also, they lose their power if we say them all the time. And that's a double-edged sword. On the one hand, they lose their power. On the other hand, you run out of words that you can use when you're really mad.
Yeah, that's true.
It's not special anymore.
Yeah, no, that's true. I mean, I think all over language, you have like special classes of words that are designed to be used in specific circumstances. But yeah, in addition to Frack, you also have like the library of curse words used by show like The Good Place, where they had to find like very dramatic replacement words.
Yes.
Or not dramatic, dynamic replacement words.
Yeah. I think my favorite was the, well, that's bullshirt. Yeah, of all of that is to say, I think that in the mid 80s, what could be said on a publicly available radio station, even in the middle of the night, was probably limited. Like, we're not talking Howard Stern show. We're talking like that DJ was someone's dad, you know?
Sure.
Not that Howard Stern isn't, I actually have no idea if he has kids, but you know what I mean? Like the guy who was the night DJ playing comedy and jazz records was probably also someone's soccer dad. Like it was not a raunchy show.
Yeah, no, I think that
they were just filling time in the middle of the night. Helping out the 9-year-olds with adult problems like insomnia.
9-year-olds with adult problems. What other adult problems did you have as a 9-year-old?
Mostly were
you
just insomnia.
Filing your taxes and dealing with important insurance matters?
I knew a surprising amount about taxes because my dad is an accountant.
Oh, that's true.
Was I filing my own at that age? No, of course not.
No, he was doing them for you.
He still is. he's still my accountant. And you can't hire him. No, I did definitely have the insomnia problem. And it was basically like if the comedy show wasn't on, then it was downstairs to watch the Floby infomercial or whatever. So
yikes.
That's probably how I discovered that Law and Order put me to sleep back in the day.
Mm.
At some point in the 90s, I clearly discovered that.
Oh, I found a spectacular replacement word ? In an episode of Law and Order I was watching earlier, and we won't spend too much time on this.
Yeah.
But there's an early episode where Chris Noth's character, Mike Logan, says to his partner, "Will this really frost my cookies, Max?" What the fuck is that?
That's amazing.
He's angry that something was withheld from him. This really frosts my cookies.
Frost my cookies. Yeah, what is that?
Who puts frosting on cookies?
Certain kinds of Christmas cookies you do.
Okay, but just as an everyday thing.
It's not a bad thing.
It's not a seasonal moment.
Well, and what is he substituting for?
That's there's like 3 or 4 big questions I have. And it's also like, this really
would he like to use, because I'm unfamiliar with the expression that this expression replaces.
This really damn my hell. Like, what are we?
Exactly. Like, what is he?
The structure of that sentence doesn't admit of any immediate alternative.
He could have just said, well, that really makes me angry, Max.
Uh-huh.
It would have had the same meaning.
I love it so much because it doesn't make any goddamn sense.
Maybe it's because you're not generally supposed to frost cookies.
Right?
But there are cookies, like there are lemon cookies that come with a bit of...
But they're very more of an icing cookies. On.
Yeah, there are specific types of cookies that are iced or frosted, but you're right that most cookies are not.
I mean, frosted metaphorically, as in like makes cold these cookies that are fresh from the oven. I cannot wrap my brain around what that's
really
supposed
chills
to mean.
My cookies. This is a longer
how
conversation.
Euphemistic can you
we'll
go?
Have it we'll continue this conversation another time, because
I think we'll have to.
It doesn't belong on this podcast. Speaking of things you've been watching, what have you been watching?
A bunch of random stuff.
Okay.
I say with the weird coming up at the end of your sentence, because I'm reading and this is what my voice does. No, I am prepared. I am choosing from my list what I want to talk about. Oh, I watched the second and third of the so-called Cornetto trilogy, which are Edgar Wright, Simon Pegg, and Nick Frost's movies, Shaun of the Dead, Hot Fuzz, and The World's End. And I rewatched Hot Fuzz and The World's End because they're two amazing, amazing movies. You know any of these movies?
I've seen Hot Fuzz, but it's been a while. It's been like a year or two since I last watched it.
Hot Fuzz.
My memory of it's not great.
Yeah, it's in this special category for me with something like Galaxy Quest, where it is both a send-up of a genre and an excellent example of a movie in that genre.
Right. You know how I love Galaxy Quest. I love it so much.
Yes.
And, my favorite Alan Rickman role.
Oh, really?
It bold. Really is.
Very bold.
I know. He's so good in it.
Yeah, tremendous. I mean, I don't mind sidestepping into that for a minute. The scene, and I guess spoiler alert for a 22-year-old movie, if you don't want to know what happens in Galaxy Quest, fast forward for a minute. But the scene where his little buddy Quellig has been shot and he's laying there in the corridor, and Alan Rickman's character, Alexander, that's right, finally says that line, "By Grapthar's hammer, by the sons of Orvan, you shall be avenged.
By Grapthar's hammer, by the sons of Orvan, you shall be avenged."
And I should look up that actor's name, but the look in his eyes, in Quellig's eyes, it just is everything. Like, that moment makes me cry every time. Like, just everything that's built up between those two characters. Like, the, because there's sort of a meta commentative element to that movie, in addition to specifically like the Justin Long group of fans who help the characters. Yes. Quellig represents fanship also. Mm-hmm. And so this idea of an actor who like burned out on this character and doesn't really appreciate the fans as much as he could, you know, to some extent, but he's mostly doing it for a job. And then this young man like rekindles that in him of like, oh, right, this shit means something to people.
Yeah.
And like the sort of the energy and the music together that just swell in that moment, and like Alexander finding new purpose, and then to have it be followed by a very ridiculous moment where he like runs down the hallway and beats the shit out of the Eternal Alien guy.
I mean, part of what's so fun about that movie is that he is so over this character. Like, he is very much.
Yeah.
And he kind of, you know, I get it, because he's, his whole deal is like, look, I'm a classically trained, you know, Shakespearean actor.
I played Henry VIII or whatever. There were five curtain calls.
And yet I'm running around with this rubber thing on my head saying nonsense about Grapthar's hammer.
Yep.
This is what I can get paid for. Like, I understand that.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, I think all of that is very resonant, even for somebody who's not, like myself, not an actor.
Yeah. I think as grateful as all of us actors are for every job we get, there are times when you're just like, Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
And I am sure, well, I think we all saw it happen a year or two ago when Constance Wu, who had been on Fresh Off the Boat for several years, slipped up, because her show was renewed. And directly after that announcement, she tweeted out, fuck.
Yeah. She may not have been thrilled about,
and then she tried to sort of take, but no, that's not what I meant, and eventually had to be like, okay, yeah, that is what I meant. I would like to be off the show now, but I'm not. Which was kind of, you know, as someone who would love to have a series and has never had that opportunity, on the one hand, it pisses me off, because if you don't want that job, go ahead and leave, because someone else wants that job.
Oh, absolutely.
They could recast. On the other hand, I have not had that opportunity, meaning I have not had to go to the same studio and play the same character every day, day in, day out for 6 years and be owned by a studio, in that I can't know, do things without their permission. Like, it is, it's definitely a double-edged sword. That's one reason series regulars are paid so well, because they are also beholden to the show and the studio. So I see both sides of that one.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think there's an aspect to every job, regardless of what the job is.
Where it's still like a job.
I don't want to get up and go into the office today.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's unfortunate that she did it so publicly. And I think I do not know her at all. I only know work. And the most of her work I've seen, as I'm not really a Fresh Off the Boat viewer. I've seen a couple of episodes, but mostly I saw her in Crazy Rich Asians.
Yeah.
Which is a wonderful movie. But I can only imagine that she genuinely had to have believed that people wouldn't know what she was talking about. Like, she's tweeting out one word. I think she genuinely had to think that, like, that people wouldn't know necessarily that it was in response to that, because otherwise that's something you go and scream in your bathroom, not something you put on Twitter.
But you have to know that people are going to be curious and try to figure it out. I don't know.
Yeah, and I think the timing was so close as to be unfortunate. Like, it really was immediate.
Yeah. But that's still like,
I mean, I think the announcement came out on Variety or Deadline or something, and hers was the very next week in my timeline. And I was like, oh no.
Oh no, this nice young person has stubbed their toe, clearly.
Well, it's like, on the one hand, that pisses me off, and on the other hand, oh shit.
I mean, and I think there was
I had a multi-level reaction to it, because part of me was like, yeah, we would all like to be this lucky, and you know, on the one hand, fuck you for being this ungrateful for the job that most of us would kill for, and on the other hand, yeah, I felt that way about my job too.
When I seem to remember the theory that she was trying to get fired, although I don't know if that's true or not, because we are beyond speculation at this point.
What a weird way to try to get fired. Although I think it worked for Jessica Biel.
God, that's
way
a long
back
time
in
ago.
The day.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. She was on Seventh Heaven.
Seventh Heaven.
Here's
which
the story
I did not watch.
Heard. And yeah, you missed nothing. I did not. I was not a regular viewer. The episodes I saw, you missed nothing.
Cruel.
My apologies to everyone on Seventh Heaven. It was one of those shows on the very godly channel. And part of
Warner Brothers?
No, it ran in reruns on what I call the God channel here, which is like, you know, the one that plays at home with the 700 Club and
sure,
and weird televangelists just talking to the camera for half of Sunday. Like, it ran on that thing when they didn't have any church to run.
Off of the WB. I understand.
It was basically fictional church. It's about a minister's family.
Mm-hmm.
And that the guy who played the minister turns out to be a monster. A lot of TV dads turn out to be bad guys in real life. And this was yet another example.
Oh, boy.
The story that I remember is that, yeah, Jessica Biel wanted off that show and couldn't get off. And again, I don't 100% know this is true. This is as close as this show ever comes to gossip. but yeah, I want to say that it's in Ivana Chubbuck's book or Bonnie Gillespie's book, or like the person who wrote this is enough of an insider that I tend to think if they don't have direct knowledge, they know enough to know this is probably what was going on. But yeah, then she kind of started going around bad mouthing the show.
Sure. Yeah.
In an effort to get fired, and it eventually worked.
The other piece of that story that I have that I know for, sorry, but straight guy reasons, is she did a photo shoot to try to get out of that show, and she was not entirely clothed in it.
Yeah, because again, you can't be doing that on the show about the God family.
Yeah. So she tried to manipulate
her
public image to disqualify herself from renewal.
I think the unfortunate part was that her own reputation took a bit of a hit. Not just because the photo shoot necessarily, but it's not a great look to go around bad mouthing the show you're on.
Because I don't think anybody at like the executive level decision makers, they don't necessarily care why you do what they do. They care about the substance. You were on a show. You displayed these characteristics and qualities. We don't want you to do that to our show in the future.
Yeah. Yeah. And for the show that you're presently on, like, this is the show you're on. How dare you?
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a very strange business.
I myself have never been fired and never tried super hard to get fired, so I don't know what that experience would be like.
Yeah, I've never had to try to get fired. I've never been fired. I've been laid off.
Okay.
You know, when a business closed, that happened to me. I've been downsized. I've never been fired for cause.
Okay.
Like I have lost work.
I was going to ask about that.
Well, as you know, like I was, I.
Yeah. I know about that, but defied for cause.
Yeah, I was laid off from my day job like 2 years ago when my department was dissolved. I've never been fired for cause. So I have no idea what that takes or what it's like, and I have no desire to find out. So.
Yeah. There are definitely times where I wouldn't have minded and just like felt, you know, sort of playing fast and loose with my own professionalism.
Well, I don't know how it works in America. In Canada, if you get fired for cause, you do not get unemployment, as far as I know.
Most of that is state by state here.
Oh, okay. So it's, you know, if you get fired for cause, especially if you were trying to, you better have savings, is my understanding.
Yeah, no, of course.
Again, I've never collected unemployment. I don't know, because I, as I said, I've been laid off, and when that has happened to me, I've been given severance. So,
yeah, you know. I think more of what I'm talking about is just having an instinct of like, fuck it, let's make some bad decisions.
I think you can do that if you work in like a coffee shop.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not a great thing to do in the corporate world, I would imagine. I don't know. Because that kind of thing I would think would follow you. And yeah. Don't you need a reference for your next?
Yep.
Like you really, I think if you really want to just throw caution to the wind, you better have some fuck you money.
Yeah.
I would guess that Jessica Biel had some fuck you money from her years on that show. That
could have been, yeah.
He probably could take that risk. And again, this is all basically hearsay. Like it's documented. I'm not sure which book I read it in.
Documented hearsay.
Title it had of something the episode. To do with, you know, personal branding and stuff is yeah. a discussion that was being had. And, you know, there are a ton of Business of Acting books. I've read a bunch of them. It was, you know, it probably wasn't Ivana Chubbuck's book because that one is much more about acting process itself and not about okay. business. But the number of acting books I've read about both process and business is upsetting. So like it's large. So I can't be 100% sure where I read that.
Yeah, I don't think I've read many acting books. I started Jenna don't Fisher's know why book. You would. Because it was supposed to be just a good book, but I haven't gotten back to it because it's in the Audible app and I'm very much in podcast mode when I'm on my phone most of the time, which is stupid.
I mean, it's an audiobook, right?
So yeah, I just find that I don't listen to a lot of audiobooks. I don't know.
Does she
muscle memory, I guess. Yeah.
Have you listened to any of it? Is it good? Is my question. Is it any good?
I have not experienced enough of it to recommend it, but I can't imagine it would be bad because I've listened to so much of her on her podcast.
Oh, she's a like delight.
A super smart, delightful person. So yeah, I'm sure it's great.
I have considered buying it several times. It just seems to be for early actors. So I feel on the one hand, I'm like, I don't know, I learn much. Like I think, in terms of the how-to of it all.
Yeah. Probably what like you would her. Get out of it is more like the personal stories and just the probably, sort of like personality related stuff. And then you'd sort of be rolling your eyes through the like, do you need a headshot parts of it?
Well, I think I would. Yeah. I don't know that I'd roll my eyes because I would understand that she had done that for early actors. You know,
not the best.
I imagine I would laugh along with some of the anecdotes. Yeah. Like, oh, yeah, been there.
Yeah.
And I know she used to write a blog and I think that was the genesis of the book. So I think some of her essays I've probably read. It's out there. You can still like some of her from a few years ago before the book, there's some blogs or something out there. I cannot remember what it's called. I can't, but you know, if you Google Jenna Fisher acting advice, you'll find it.
You know what? Do your own homework. We're not here to hold your hands. Look, it's a free podcast.
If we remember, we'll put the link in the show notes. So you watched Hot Fuzz.
I did.
Talk about that some more.
It's such a tightly written movie. Mm-hmm. It's just like everything is planted effectively. Everything is paid off effectively. Mm-hmm. There's references that work if you don't know what they're referencing. And they also work if you do. So like there's Bad Boys 2 and Point Break are movies that are explicitly referenced in the movie. Mm-hmm. Like they're spoken about in dialogue and the characters watch them. not in their entirety. This isn't a Zack Snyder movie.
A very long movie.
11 hours long. but then there's moments where you see the characters like reenact, not knowingly, but the actors reenact. How do I want to say this? Because reenact's not the right word. Anyway, there are visual references to both of those movies, implicitly and explicitly. It's fantastic. I didn't prepare to discuss this in depth, so I'm just treading water here. Falling everywhere.
Just pick a new topic. I was not trying to put you on the spot.
I'm fine with that.
I just got away from it so quickly.
Yeah, no, I'm just listening to my own sentence construction. I'm like, this is not organized good at all.
Organized gooder.
But yeah, like it's one of the few action-y type movies that really holds up excellently. It's got a really strong emotional through line. Edgar Wright, I think it may be his best directing work. It's just like masterful example of what he is capable of as a visual storyteller. And yeah, it's the references between the three Cornetto movies are all really strong. So the more you watch any and all of those movies, the more you can enjoy all of them. Mm-hmm. It's just it's a goddamn delight.
Nice.
What's on your list to talk about?
Oh, I have a few things.
Hit me.
So all of mine, I realize, are quite lady-centric, as is my way.
Okay, fair enough.
So I finally watched, the price of a rental came down, so I finally watched Barb and Star go to Vista Del Mar.
Yeah, I've been waiting on that one to pay less for as well.
Kristen Wiig and Annie Mumolo. It is now like a normal price to rent on iTunes or whatever. I think I rented it on Amazon, but it's like $5 now.
Okay.
So it's reasonable. And which is not to say, I understand that the film industry is having a problem with not being able to be in theaters anymore.
Sure.
And I understand them charging a premium for new releases at home. I will not pay $30.
Yeah.
To rent a movie for myself. I understand that that is probably based on, well, if you know, you and your significant other went out to the movies and, you know, got some popcorn, this is what it would, like, two tickets and some popcorn, this is what it would cost you.
Yeah, you'd be lucky to get out the door for $30.
Yeah, and I think that's true, but I'm watching it by myself. So me going to my matinee.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, I pay $14.95 for this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it's, I'm not going to pay the price of two tickets, even when it's new, unless it is spectacularly special. I did that with Promising Young Woman.
Yeah.
But I can't do it with every movie that comes out that I want to see. Sometimes I got to wait a few weeks. So I waited a few weeks on Barb and Star, and it's a delight. It is not quite what I expected.
Okay.
I don't want to spoil it for you. I didn't know you hadn't seen it, so I'll be fairly brief, but I will say, for the first several minutes of the movie, I thought, did I rent the wrong movie?
Oh no.
Because that is Kristen Wiig. But this is not, where are Barb and Star? And what is happening? And
okay,
it does not at all start the way that I expected. So
and then something happened.
Yeah, well, I understood it to be, all of the previews basically show it as these two lady friends who head off to Vista Del Mar on vacation, right?
Yeah.
So this is what I was expecting. Now that does happen. But there's a whole other plot going on and a whole other element to the story that's not even hinted at in any of the trailers. And that's what it starts with.
Okay.
And so that's the part that I don't wish to spoil at all, because in some ways it's almost two movies in one.
Interesting.
It's a little bit of a, not quite a fugitive movie, not quite, but there's just so much more going on that is a delight to discover, but also very confusing, because that's what starts out the movie and you're like, what, did I hit the wrong button? But no, you didn't, and you should stick with it, because it's a delight. And then some of the more expected things that are just fun kind of happen. You know, they shake up their lives and go to Vista Del Mar, partly because there's one element to the movie that I will spoil, because it is hilarious. So I assume that you're familiar, that everyone listening is familiar with the concept of a book club.
The concept of a book club, yeah.
So Barb and Star belong to something akin to a book club, but it doesn't even pretend to be, because the thing about book clubs that you hear is, like, people don't always read the book.
Wine club.
Well, these guys have a talking club.
Okay, that's not just friendship.
Well, apparently not. Talking club has a lot of rules.
Oh, wow.
They have some very bland friends who belong to talking club with them, played by just some wonderful actors that you will recognize and that I will let you discover, because it is delightful. When they pop up on screen, you're like, oh, that's, I don't know. I'll give you one, like, Phyllis from The Office is Phyllis in talking Smith, club. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And several other people that you will be delighted to see play the boring, bland friends whose idea of a fun night in is talking club.
Yeah, that sounds perfect to me, actually, Phyllis Smith.
Barb and Star get kicked out of talking club because they break a rule.
Can I ask about the rules? Is the first rule of talking club, don't talk about talking club? And is the second rule of talking club, don't talk about talking club?
No, the first and only big rule of talking club that I remember from the movie is you can never, ever, ever not tell the truth about anything.
Wow, bold.
You can't lie, but also I don't think you're allowed to just lie by omission, like to just not say something.
Wow, that's a lot. That's heavy.
So they break this rule.
Yeah.
And they get thrown out of talking club.
For implication.
For
insinuation.
At least delay, for kind of like delaying telling the truth on something, which is understandable when you're with them in the scene experiencing talking club. You understand why they don't volunteer this information, but then it comes out. And then they get kicked out of talking club. It's very funny. And during some of their wild time in Vista Del Mar, we do flashback to talking club just for the juxtaposition of how incredibly boring it is.
Yeah.
I enjoyed that very much. I thought it was a great send up of, you know, ladies clubs like that.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a delight. I highly recommend it. Pay the $5 or whatever. It's a fun ride. It's a popcorn movie.
Yeah, that's one of these the internet won't shut up about movies. And like, all right, fine, I will watch it, but I'm not going to pay $20 or whatever. Like, I try to be, this is more of a sense of responsibility than anything inherent to the media itself. I just try to not spend money on movies that I haven't seen, just because that's an unknown quantity. So like, if it's a movie that I know already, because otherwise, if I'm renting a movie every night, that adds up really fast.
Yes, I
see you
I'm
laughing
sorry.
At me. And because... I understand your objection to this.
No. It's probably not even that. It's where my brain went was when you said, I try not to spend money on movies I haven't seen. I was thinking like, in the normal times, what about going to the theater?
Sure.
Like you... Theoretically, when you go to the theater, you're spending money on movies you haven't seen.
But that's, I mean, how many times a year? Like,
yeah, I know. It just made me laugh momentarily. Like, I only pay for movies I've already seen. How did you see them the first time?
Yeah.
No, this, I would have paid to see this in a theater. I would not have paid $30 for one ticket in any case, but I would have paid to see it in a theater.
Yeah. Oh, that's another thing I was going to say before is I think single folks get penalized for these like family rate, you know, computations of, you know, well, we'll put this out on Disney Plus for $30 because odds are you and your 2.5 kids and 1.5 dogs and your white picket fence are going to watch this 80 times over the next 4 weeks. Mm-hmm. Like that's, how do I get into a special category where I can pay a reasonable, like means tested amount for this thing? Does my computer need to have like an infrared, like a heat
some
tracker?
Kind of facial recognition where I can prove it's just me watching?
Yeah.
And that's, I really think that's what they were doing with the cost of this. Cause I think when it came out, it was $29.99 as a rental. And that to me was too much.
Yeah.
Because that's again, for a couple, not as big a deal. Cause you're like, oh, it's $15 each. That's really no different than if we went to the movies.
Yeah.
But when I go to the movies, I pay $15, not 30. Like I don't buy two tickets to sit by myself. If I go with a friend, they usually buy their own ticket. Like, you know, I'm usually just paying for me unless I'm treating someone. I live alone. It's a pandemic. No one is allowed to come over. Like there's literally a rule in place right now provincially that no one's allowed to have guests. Yeah. So I am not, I'm not paying $30 to watch a movie in my living room by myself. I'm sorry. But I happily paid $5 for it.
Yeah.
I did pay like $20 for Promising Young Woman, but that felt like a different situation.
Yeah, see, like that's the asterisk case for me because I had looked forward to that movie, like we talked about on our dedicated episode, for a year and really wanted to be part of literally our conversation, but also what I knew would be a cultural conversation around that movie. Mm-hmm. And like the other movies that I've been anticipating for as long or longer, because I'm a big Marvel guy. We don't talk a ton about comic book movies on this show, but I've been waiting for the Black Widow movie for almost a year. The James Bond movie, No Time to Die, that I will pay $30 for. Like there's a short list, but just generally like for you and me to pay even just like an extra $10 a week to rent movies or an extra $15 a week to go to the movies. That's a big chunk of our annual budgets.
Yeah, that adds up. I think I paid it for The Invisible Man last year.
Oh yeah.
Which I think was the first movie that they did that with where they released
it. I think it might have been,
sort of theatrically in people's homes.
Yeah.
in air quotes. And I did, but again, that was one that I had been waiting for that now wasn't going to be in the theater. I think Elizabeth Moss is a phenomenal actor.
Oh yeah.
I really wanted to see it and it was worth it. And, you know, in the time, the, you know, 24, 48 hours, whatever that I had it, I watched it 2 or 3 times.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I paid for it.
Yeah. That's the other calculation that I always have to do. It's like, okay, when do I start my rental period? Because I need to feel like I've gotten my money's worth out of this.
Because if I paid like $3.99 or something for it, then I'm happy to watch it once and be done. But if I'm really, you know, getting the new release and paying the steep fee, then yeah, I want to watch it more than once.
And then like, how petty can we make this conversation? But the next calculus that I always have to do for older-ish movies that are like for sale or for rent is what is the cost difference between the rental price and the sale price? Yes. If they want $3.99 to rent it and $6.99 to buy it,
am I ever gonna watch it
a second time?
Yeah, if I think I might watch it again, I might as well.
Yeah, yeah. That's
yeah. And then there are some that I've bought that then have later come to streaming or that were off streaming and have
Inevitable.
Back. Yeah. Like that happened to me with Clue, where it just wasn't streaming anywhere, so I bought it.
Yeah.
And then of course it came back to streaming. That said, it's Clue. I've been watching it since 1985. Exactly. I've probably seen it at least 10 times. I will watch it again. It's brilliant. So one I don't mind.
I can't remember what it was, but I bought something, I think like February, the very end of February. And then the first week of March it was on HBO or something.
Yeah,
like it was 2 or 3 days later. It was this movie that I honestly, I don't want to open up my app to see what it was because we don't need to get too terribly sidetracked, but it was something I had been itching for weeks and weeks, and finally I was like, okay, it's only $10, I know. Yeah. I will want to watch this later, fine. And then the universe was like, "Huh."
I rented at Christmas, near Christmas, I rented Happiest Season.
Yeah.
And I loved it so much that I bought it.
Oh, yeah.
And then, of course, later it came on streaming.
Yep.
But at the time, I didn't know how long that would be or if it would. And I thought like, oh, this is making it into my regular Christmas rotation. Like, this is a for sure. Yeah. I'm going to watch this at least once a year movie.
Saw something Scrooged and at least two other movies that came up on streaming services in April. And I was like, who is licensing holiday movies in the spring? I mean, it's probably cheaper now, but...
I think you can watch Happiest Season happening? On Amazon right now.
Oh, but yeah. I don't know for that specifically. Like, but
I don't need to because it's April.
But this was like, I mean, Scrooge is the Bill Murray, like that's a holiday classic. It's 40 years old. Who is like really aching to see that in the middle of April?
One guy and he works for the streaming service.
I guess, right? I mean, I assume a lot of those license deals are bundles. You know, they just here are the probably 200 movies we have available for you.
Or
for
here's low, our low Bill price Murray of whatever, collection.
Right? Like that sort of makes sense to me. But it is funny to just scroll through the new releases on Netflix or whatever. And like, this now? Why?
Yeah. I wonder, like, that's one that just makes me wonder, like, oh, did they need Groundhog Day and they couldn't get it unless they also bought Scrooge?
Which is funny to think of, like, the licensees, like, trying to push movies of, like, no, you can't have this one unless you take this one too. Like,
yeah. Well,
I don't want that one. Nope, don't care. You have to take it. Go screw
deal,
yourself.
Man. Package deal.
Like, but no one wants to watch it. I don't care.
Doesn't matter.
What is this character? Chewing on a cigar, just being a pain in the ass?
I think so. He's a cartoon is what he is.
Right. But negotiating with a real person. It's like a Who Framed Roger Rabbit scene that we're writing.
Very much so, yes. What else is on your list?
I think the other major thing that I spent time watching, which I didn't really mean to, it just kind of happened, was I watched the first two seasons of Arrested Development again.
Oh yeah.
It's like sort of put it on in the background and, you know, it just kept going.
I've been revisiting Seinfeld.
Oh, right.
I've been doing a hardcore full Seinfeld rewatch. Oh,
I assume to craft your Elaine spinoff.
No, you saw my tweet about how Elaine is the best character.
Of course.
And Elaine is the best character.
I know that about you and about her.
Yeah. She is the best character. She's also, I had not thought about how kind of groundbreaking she was for a female character in her time. But that's kind of another Oh, I don't want to jump all over your Arrested Development.
No, I was dead air.
Is that
was
all
just
you had to say about Arrested
Development? No, I just was okay. happy for you to. What I was going to add about Seinfeld was I wanted to pitch you on Twitter and then I just forgot to write an Elaine spinoff that doesn't acknowledge any of the other characters. Like, it's not really a spinoff. It just is Julia Louis-Dreyfus, you know, however long it's been since the show went off the air, 23 years or something. And like, yeah, no, this is just Elaine and she's having her life. And there could be other Seinfeld supporting characters, but not Jerry, George, or Kramer.
Right.
I just think that would be so funny.
She refers to like the weird little bald man she used to know, or
this guy I used to date who liked Superman, like something.
His crazy neighbor.
Like Wayne Knight can show up, but just specifically just like never see those.
Have coffee with Newman.
Or just, you know, pass him on the street.
Yeah.
Just hello, Newman. Just
yes.
Do the thing. Yeah. But I just, for some reason, that really tickled me. Was I was sitting at work scrolling Twitter with nothing to do. Like,
I suppose it would be called Elaine.
Yeah.
Now aren't they all still in jail?
I honestly don't really remember how
don't
that
know.
Ended.
All
but
I know,
she could get out for good behavior.
Yeah, I don't. I do not think I ever watched the finale after it aired the first time. So when I get there.
Yeah.
We'll see. I remember it was
give
long
us an update on that in May
and
or
confusing,
June.
And they all ended up in jail.
And they brought back like everyone who'd ever been in more than two episodes.
I think so. Well, except probably not Susan because Susan's dead.
Sure.
But also, I will say, I had forgotten how long Susan was around.
I do not have a working knowledge of the show. So I recognize many of the things that you and I are both saying, but I have watched maybe a quarter of the episodes and never like in a concerted way. Because
it was must-see TV when I was
sure. But I think I just... wasn't allowed to watch a ton of TV and in just like a couple of years too young for that to been in my wheelhouse.
Yeah I know that definitely makes a difference, like when it was on you would have been a little bit too young for it. But Susan is George's girlfriend, on again off again girlfriend slash later fiance. And I did not remember how very long she had been on the show. Like, to me she existed for a season and a half maybe.
Oh, wow. Even that's a lot.
Years. Like, I'm astounded to discover that she was still around in season 7.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
We both would have lost money on that quiz.
Now, did you start Arrested Development because of the recent passing of Jessica Walters?
Happened that same week, but it was unrelated because it just happened to have watched the premiere. Like, it's one of those shows that kind of like pops up in my personal queue every once in a while. Like, yeah, I should watch this again. Mm-hmm. Have you watched the show?
I am to Arrested Development as you are to Seinfeld.
Okay, fair enough.
Not in terms of the age thing, but I've seen some of it. I don't have a good working knowledge of it. I kind of know who everyone is and what it is, and there's a banana stand.
Yeah. Accurate.
It's a banana. What could it cost? $10?
That's right. So I watched it, I think, starting in the second season when it was new. And so it was like on the bandwagon enough because it's, you know, alt comedy. You know, this was during the period where Fox was canceling everything good. And it just felt like, you know, nothing was bound for this world if people liked it. And so, yeah, I think I've probably watched the first three seasons a half a dozen times. And so, yeah, every once in a while, it's for me, like Friends or The Office or Cheers, Frasier, Seinfeld, these shows that people just sort of like have on in the background, you know, it's part of our common cultural language kind of thing, but it's super fucking weird. And like a lot of it, I wasn't super crazy about the first time it came around. And so like some of those plot lines don't hold up well just because they weren't, it just didn't work for me personally. And also like culture has changed even just in 20 years.
True of Seinfeld also, there's some cringy stuff now.
Yeah. But I mean, yeah, obviously we could talk about Jessica Walter's work for a very long time. Between that and Archer, I think it's, you have a lot of folks our age who are sort of reintroduced to the work of someone who'd been around for a very, very long time already, just a substantial career.
Very,
But yeah, I don't we don't have that in front of us. So just to well, say, a powerhouse who will be missed, right?
Yes, I think if we start talking about her, this episode gets even longer than it already is.
I think we're doing okay.
we don't need to fill time. I will say I have always in my brain, I will frequently momentarily mix up Arrested Development and Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Interesting.
I have no excuse for this.
I kind of get that in a general sort of like half hour comedy mise-en-scène sort of.
So similar.
I can
tone.
Twist my arm into getting yeah. where you're going.
Similar time, similar tone-ish.
Yeah.
I think is what happened. And because I never really watched either of them regularly.
And let's be honest, a lot of white people banging around in both. A lot of
white
of
people
shows.
Banging around.
White you people all look the people. Same.
Look, even we can't tell the white people apart.
Well, I can tell people apart. Between the two of us.
You're better at it. I cannot tell the Hollywood Chris's apart, as has been established. There are also just, the older I get, the more I think a lot of young women actors look the same.
Okay.
Like, there's just an awful lot of young blonde people. Maybe this was always true. And I don't know who they are.
But I also I'm trying to I do remember think... like people from classic Hollywood for you to mix up. Like
I think there
Marilyn
really has...
and Jane Mansfield.
Yeah, but there's been a real shift in the last, like when I look at who the, you know, famous and respected actors of both genders were, but particularly sure. women in the 70s, 80s, even 90s. And then I look at who they became after that. It's like, oh, well, of course I could tell people apart back then because like Shelley Long and Bette Midler didn't look anything alike.
Yeah. But
they were both super and neither was a supermodel.
Yeah.
Now they're all supermodels and I can't tell them apart.
I think that
with
is
no
something
disrespect to Ms. Midler or Ms. Long.
Yes, absolutely. You know? Absolutely. I think there is something
allowed
to
okay, a wider range of physicality mm-hmm. back then. Than they are now. And so it was, there was just more variety. Yeah.
Yeah. I think network TV specifically sort of develops formulae and then tries to sort of hove as close to that pattern as they can. And mm-hmm. so you tend to get the same, not just the same types of shows, but the same types of people, you know, archetypes in your shows. And so you'll have the this kind of guy and the this kind of girl and then this kind of whoever in the this kind of place doing the this kind of job.
Yeah.
And everything kind of becomes interchangeable.
This is a show about a bunch of rich teenagers in high school. Okay. Yeah. Is it Heart of Dixie? Is it Pretty Little Liars? Is it The OC? Is it mm-hmm. Gossip Girl? I never watched any of these shows, but I know they all look the same.
Yeah.
Some of them, I know, for instance, once years ago, I think the first time I went to tour the WB lot a couple of times.
Yep.
I think it was the first time, might have been the second. I don't have clear memory of these as separate events, really. It's basically the same tour. But we couldn't go to Midwest Street, I think, because either Pretty Little Liars or Heart of Dixie was using it.
Okay.
At the like actively filming. And so they're like, we can sort of do a drive-by, but we can't go to that area. If anyone wants to sort of pop their head out and look at that part of their lot. And they explained that those were the two shows that filmed there and they did like alternating weeks or something for their outdoor scenes because one of the shows yep. used the gazebo and the other show didn't.
Yeah.
But the exteriors otherwise were basically the same.
Yeah.
It never, because, you know, that was, I knew that section of the lot because it's where Gilmore Girls was filmed. Uh-huh. And a lot of shows have used that, but you know, most shows at least try to make it look a little bit different, but here were two shows yeah. simultaneously just filming on the same. Like,
it's hard to dress a whole street.
That's just it. And if you've yeah. ever been there, it's even more than a street. Like it's
yeah, yeah. There's like a neighborhood on a couple.
It's a little neighborhood.
Lots.
Yeah, it's got a church and a school and sometimes a gazebo.
Yeah,
and a weird barn thing that is sometimes a dance school and who knows what else.
There's a particular street, I'm not sure which lot it's on, but it's probably, we could look it up because it was, they used the front of one of the buildings for the apartment that the characters lived in How I Met Your Mother. Uh-huh. And then there was a police procedural, it might've been NCIS, I can't remember which one, but this is something that I saw like 15 years ago. Mm-hmm. So there's a particular stoop where the characters spent a lot of time, you know, beginning of episodes, end of episodes. And then I saw two other characters in a different show walk by it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, wait a minute, you're not in New York.
There's a building in my neighborhood that I get a kick out of because I like to think that only forensic pathologists live there.
Okay.
Because it was used as Agent Scully's home on the X-Files.
Right.
But it was also used as the home of the coroner Da Vinci on Da Vinci's Inquest.
Okay.
Not filmed here, which is a Canadian show that I think made it down to the States. It was a big hit here. It ran for 8 years, which us is unheard of.
Yeah, that's a lot.
But it then traveled down, and turns out Americans liked it too. But I got a kick out of it because I believe the X-Files used the building first. That show existed first.
Sure.
And then I remember seeing an episode of Da Vinci's Inquest one time, and we didn't tend to go home with him very often, but we did. Like, you know, the show went home, and it was like, wait a minute. How many medical examiners?
I like this new show that we're pitching. It's called Pathology Manor. Everyone who lives there is a forensics expert.
In Canada, a coroner is not a doctor. A coroner does not do that part. They show up and pronounce the person dead.
Well, you actually, there's different labels that actually get applied regionally here too. So
yes, yeah. So
pathologists and medical examiners and coroners, yeah.
Yeah, the coroner would never do the autopsy in Canada. I don't think it would necessarily even be done in their office. They lead inquests into suspicious deaths and things, but it's a desk job. There's no medical training required for it. But you don't need to be a doctor. You just need to show up at the scene of the crime and like, look at the dead body. I don't even think they have to pronounce them dead when I think about it. I think they just have to like be there and see it that like there's documentation of
there's paperwork. Yeah.
Yeah.
You have to give the next like phase of the investigation permission to start.
Basically, yes, because the whole Da Vinci's Inquest, the whole show was basically centered on this coroner and how he worked with the police to solve suspicious deaths that, you know, may or may not be murders.
But
a lot of equivocal deaths on that show.
Sure. I actually think Jill Hennessy could also live there too.
wrong city. She, she has always been based in the Toronto part of Canada. This is Vegas.
But still, this is the show that we're writing. That's separate of time and space.
Jordan could also live there, but she didn't. But I get a kick out of it. It's a building I see a lot. And it was made very famous, like to the point that people still come and take pictures of it.
Oh, wow.
Because it was on the X-Files.
I bet there's like an X-Files tour. We probably have talked about this before.
Used to be, and I kind of knew the person who ran it.
I
knew his girlfriend.
Of course you did. Why did I ever speculate about something that you, of course, would have direct firsthand knowledge of?
All right, well, here's a story. Sure. So when I moved out to Vancouver to do full-time acting training, I attended the William Davis Center for Actors Study, which still does exist under the banner of a larger school called Van Arts. Mm-hmm. It went from being its own self-contained school to being absorbed by them and becoming their acting program.
Cool.
However, back in the day, it had its own building and everything. And I was a full-time student there. I also worked in the office part-time for like 6 years. It was my home away from home. the titular William Davis is better known professionally as William B. Davis. He played the cigarette smoking man on the X-Files.
Oh, right.
All those years. He was also my Shakespeare teacher. I got to Vancouver in 2001 and the X-Files was still running. And I'm sure that 20 years later, I'm allowed to say that.
The statute of limitations.
It was definitely still running because I remember that we had a substitute in the Shakespeare class for a couple of weeks because Bill had to go to LA and film the finale of the show.
Cool.
Sometime in 2002, like in the spring, he had to leave for a couple of weeks because even though his character was long dead, he was
when
also...
When does that stop the X-Files?
Never, apparently. So anyway, the show was still very much on and still very much in the culture. And because it had filmed in Vancouver for 5 years, and it just, like, you cannot sneeze in this city without hitting something that the X-Files used. And some industrious person who owned a building called the Pendrell Suites, which was used as Dana Scully's apartment on the X-Files, had this thing called the X-Tour, where he had a limousine and he had like magnetic decals that said the X-Tour. And so people would pay him my knowledge is limited because I never took the tour, but people would pay him to take them around the city in this limousine and show them locations, I gather. And we were a stop on the tour.
Okay.
And I remember coming out of my, I think it was my movement class one day, like to use the bathroom. And I walked into the lobby and there were all these people in there. And we had a wall of headshots of the faculty.
Sure, yeah.
And some grads who had done quite well. And so we had all these headshots on the wall and these people were pointing at the headshots and being like, oh my God, that is Gary Davey. And he was in episode whatever and he played this guy. And then he did this episode and he played that guy. And then he was Crazy Bob Spitz. And then he did, but they knew everybody and what, wow. And they got so about these black and white headshot photographs. And of course they wanted to see Bill. And of course he was not there. He's like, he's here once a week when he's teaching, guys. Sorry. He does not live here. No one's home. And it was all being led by a person dressed in an alien costume. And naturally, all the people had like alien ties and t-shirt. It was a weird experience because, yep, like, you know, we all knew who he was. I watched the show. I watched the show before I ever attended the school.
Yeah.
It was on my list of like my pro-con list about attending the school. I hope Bill doesn't listen to this. The fact that he was who he was on my list of cons.
Oh, wow.
Nothing personal. It was just sort of like, oh, is this going to be like a thing? First, like, I do watch the show. I never want to be the fan in the class because that person, there always is one and they're very annoying.
Yeah.
And also just like, yeah, our class is going to get hijacked by fans. And sometimes, yes, mostly no, but sometimes, yes, they did.
Well, and also there's probably a type of actor who walks around with their credit on their forehead,
which he does not.
Yeah, I mean, wouldn't expect, but
he's extremely recognizable.
Yeah,
which is something that when you know somebody like that personally, you forget that about them.
Sure.
So years later, Bill and I directed a play together. He asked me to be his assistant director.
That's awesome.
And I was, and you know, so we had meetings all the time about the show. And one time we came out of a coffee shop and we were walking down like back to the car and people were staring at us and I could not figure it. I was like, what is happening? And then all of a sudden I was like, oh, right, he's famous.
That's adorable.
Like you forget, you know, because
yeah,
I don't look at him and think X-Files. I look at him, yep, and think Bill, but I, yep, understand when I think about it that other people, of course, look at him and directly associate him with the show. Anyway, so yes, we were a stop on the X tour. So to answer your question, that tour very much existed. It might still, although I believe that building at the time that building, nobody lived in it. It was a hotel that was largely used by, okay, the film industry, which was convenient if people wanted to film in it. Like they have, it's quite lovely. It's like six huge suites with like three bedrooms each. And
yeah,
you know, it was all furnished at the time because it was like producers would stay in it when they were in town for their show.
Okay.
And the guy who owned it ran the X tour. His girlfriend, who turned out, I later found, to be one of the people under the alien costume, was in my class. And I didn't know for months.
Wow.
That was her.
She really pulled it over on
boyfriend you. Slash. Well, she had a whole alien head on and ever, like you wouldn't, yeah, have known. Like it should be anybody. She's full on dressed like an alien with a,
it could have been me,
rubber head and everything. Could have been you. It was very clearly a woman, but explained why she was absent and late so much.
Wow.
But yeah, it turned out she was his much younger girlfriend of the guy who ran the tour.
Yeah.
And I mean, I have not seen an X-Files limousine in many years. I imagine that the tour no longer happens, but I don't know because that building was sold and like it's condos now. People live in it. Looks, yeah, mostly the same, but people actually live in it now. So that guy obviously sold it at some point. Yeah, it was wild. It was wild. And the having to experience being a stop on the tour didn't happen that often, but it happened occasionally. Also, fans would stop by looking for him and he was never there because, yeah, he was, yeah, only there when he taught.
Yeah.
And we got all kinds of insane mail and emails.
I bet.
So it was fun. We had a little file folder of crazy mail.
Well, I feel like unless there's anything else you wanted to add, that might be a good segue, because we can ask our wonderful listeners, please send us some crazy mail. We always want to hear from
you. Crazy mail. I mean, some of it was nice. Some of it, because it was like, as I said, I worked there part time. So when I say we had a folder of mail, I mean in the office we had.
Of course.
The only the weirdest stuff got kept. Most of it just got, you know, passed on to him, or you know, he would read it and do whatever he did with it. I think he answered the non crazy stuff.
That's nice.
And we got emails and stuff, and that was mostly just emailing back and saying like, this is not the, you know, this is the email address for the school. Like, please don't send your fan mail here.
Inappropes, kids.
Inappropes. Yeah, it's not his personal email address. Go away. Politely, but there was a lot of like, we really appreciate your love of Mr. Davis. This is a business. Please don't send your fan mail to us. Like, he has an assistant for that. Yeah, good times. Good times. Fun times. Miss that place. Yeah, so go ahead, listeners, please feel free to send us mail. Just don't send us anything that would scare us.
Yeah, should we trust people to use their own judgment on that?
I don't know. I think it's still the old email address too, talentcrushchatshow@gmail.com.
Yeah.
We really got to update that. But you can email us there. And check it occasionally. You can email us at talentcrushchatshow@gmail.com, despite the fact that this has been Buddies Without Borders for
a year and change. Especially more change by the time you're hearing this than when we're recording it.
Yes, this was a while ago. And we're Buds Without Boards on the Twitters.
Buds W-O Boards.
That's right.
Because of character limits. Yes. BuddiesWithoutBorders.tumblr.com. Personal plugs. Ready, go.
Oh, steviejackson.ca @steviekj on Twitter and Instagram. And it will have happened by the time that you're
I wish we could. This,
but I a script that I wrote is having a live table reading tomorrow night, Monday, April 12th. Is that right? Okay. I don't have the date in front of me. Maybe I'll update you all on how that went next time, because I realize as I say it that too late for any of you to go.
Is it going to be recorded? Is it still going to be up somewhere?
I don't know.
Okay.
I'm not in charge of it. There's an event in Vancouver called the Cold Reading Series that used to happen in person, where actors would be cast on the spot to cold read scripts in front of an audience. It was a way for writers to hear their work out loud.
Yeah.
In front of an audience and really gauge the response to it. Because of the pandemic, of course, we can no longer do that. So the team running it has pivoted, as you do, to Zoom. And so it all runs virtually now, which means you cannot really see or hear the audience.
Yeah.
So it's more of a streaming show. But we'll all be aware that you're there. So.
now who's sending creepy messages?
Yeah. Anyway, it's happening. I'm excited about it. However, by the time this comes out, it will be over. So I'll try to get it together for the next time I have a script to submit. I don't know.
And you will not be performing, correct? Your role will be, I'm crawling out of my skin a little bit.
Yeah, I will be there to listen and take notes on what works and what might need tweaking, and to get the scary, scary feedback from the people who feel the need to email it to me. So, no, yes, I'm nervous. Yes, I'm looking forward to it. It's exciting. It's the first time that I have written a script and then had a reading before actually casting the thing. Awesome. When we did Charlotte, it was all cast before we ever had a table read.
Yeah.
And so it's exciting to get to hear actors say my words out loud. you plug things now.
Well, yeah, I hope people did. Enjoy.
Well, people have enjoyed that. Chris, where can people find you online?
Website is now. Stevie's drinking, so I have to be careful not to say drinking water.
I've swallowed.
So I have to. Hey, yeah, I have to not drinking. Say. It's I have water. To not say anything ridiculous is what I was going to say to try to make her spit take on her own laptop.
Too late.
ChristopherRoyce.com, Chris M. Royce on Twitter and Instagram. Tell me things too. Reach out and say hi, and we always appreciate everything that our listeners do to help grow the show. So rate, review, subscribe, tell a friend, tell your enemies, tell a stranger.
Send us your enemies. Turn like them into friends.
In a bag? In a box? What does that mean? God,
no. listeners, you were warned that this would go off the rails. I feel we have filled that promise.
That's right.
Thank you for hanging with us.
You've gotten your money's worth.
We will see you next time.
Bye.